Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
Commodity Week was recorded on the 14th day of May.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Bill Gentry. He's with Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Brian Stark of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. And Alan Brugler of Brugler Marketing and Management from Omaha, Nebraska. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Illinois Public Media, it's public radio for the farming world.
Support comes from AgriGold. Celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
Thank you, gentlemen, for joining the panel today. Let's start by gathering a list of discussion items for the day. Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities, your thoughts.
I think it's partly the bird flu and maybe the possibility of putting in a low in the wheat market today.
Alan Brugler of Brugler Marketing and Management out of Omaha, Nebraska.
Well, I'd agree with the wheat discussion. I think there's the question also would be Informa's acreage numbers today, the big jump in the soybeans versus USDA's expectations and a little lower corn acreage.
Kurt Kimmel?
It's definitely going to be wheat. We haven't seen a 30-cent move in wheat for a long time. I can't remember last. We've seen some big moves, but it's clear back last winter. So it was a dynamic market, a lot of volume.
And Brian Stark.
I think the biggest thing, obviously, is strength in the corn basis here in old crop and how long that maintains itself until the farmer releases what he's got left.
Oh, let's start there. That sounds more like fun. We can talk about wheat in a second, but old crop corn bases and soybeans, for that matter, have popped pretty decently. Tell me about how long you think it'll be around, Brian.
Well, that's a great question. I think that's the million-dollar question for us as we look forward. The end user continues to show strength as the basis grinds higher while farmers continue to finish planting across the Corn Belt. And we're finding that it's a struggle to see how much old crop corn really is left on farm, even though all of the private analysts and everyone in the trade seems to think that there's a ton of corn to come, at least in East Central Illinois. So the market generally knows or tells the story, knows more than we do, and basis has been basically screaming higher since fall. So it's a question, I guess, of if and when we'll see a slowdown here this summer.
And so when you tap farmers on the shoulder, they say, yeah, I have it, but I'm not giving it to you, or do they just not tell you?
I think a lot of it has moved in on free DP here this winter and early spring. We're estimating a third to 40% still remains unpriced, some of it in the elevator's hands. Some of it's still on farm, but not as much on farm as we would anticipate, given the expected $1.8 billion carryout the government's talking about.
No, wait, so let me make sure that I have this right. So you're figuring, if you're forward figuring this, you're thinking something's wrong. Either there was a lot more used for livestock feed or a smaller crop, because you don't think the farmers actually have it in the bin as much as maybe everybody or the grain stocks reports might have said, and that you've seen a lot of it come to the grain elevator. Do I have that right in my mind?
I think you've got it summarized pretty good, which makes the two quarterly stock reports at the end of June and the end of September quite interesting in my mind as we move forward. But getting back to the question of if and when corn basis and the old crop fades, I think for the most part, guys are willing to see with no weather issues on the horizon for something to develop here up until pollination. So we may not see the last of it move until that time frame.
Alan Brugler, do you have a different view of this from your vantage point in Omaha?
Yeah, I think there's a couple pieces there. First of all, you've got to look at the regional distributions. The residual supplier for corn historically, and I think this year as well, is the upper Midwest. There's a lot more corn sitting up there in the Dakotas and Minnesota and even parts of Iowa and Nebraska, relative supply. I think you're going to drain that Indiana and Iowa and Illinois area pretty quickly because you've got ethanol plants, you've got the barge, you got rail, you got everything pulling it out of there. You don't see that same movement out of the upper Midwest. So I think what we're going to end up finding is the corn that is left is mostly in that more remote part of the country relative to the ports. The other thing I'd point out is, we should be seeing strong basis here. We've had an extended drop in the market, which typically firms the basis, and we're at the time of year a farmer doesn't want to take time off to move grain, which is May. So you should see a strong basis here. I've been getting a lot of calls from my producers saying, should we lock in our basis? And my stock response has been, if you think we got a bottom in the charts, then yes, the answer is you should.
Are you sure that the corn's there in that part of the world? And I only ask this question because I talk to the Andersons facility out of Everly, Iowa every week, and the draw there has been getting wider and wider and wider, meaning their pull for the ethanol plants. And I think they have, Brian, maybe you can correct me, either two or three within 20 miles of that facilities or those two facilities up there. And those ethanol plants have been drawing from much further away. And if their bids are strong, then there may not be the corn there.
Well, I think you answered the question, though. You said there's two plants within 20 miles. I know there's places in Iowa. There's five plants within 50 miles, all drawn from the same set of counties. So I think, again, the areas that have the really high consumption are starting to get towards the bottom of the barrel. And you'll see that reflected, I think, as you get into June and July and some of the ethanol grind dropping. They just won't have enough corn available to them to be at full run. But that doesn't mean the corn doesn't exist in the country as a whole.
Hey, Brian, do me a favor really quickly. Look up your bids out of Everly, Iowa, and see where they are, because that's also bird flu central. I think they're within 10 miles of one of those facilities. And if I remember correctly, about 2.5 million bushels over a four-month period might be available in that area. Extra, though, that's probably in the bin and locked up somewhere. But I kind of want to know what's happening there. Okay, Kurt Kimmel, you've been listening to this discussion. Your thoughts as it relates technically to the marketplace and where we are in the charts.
Well, we've been getting a lot of calls. Producers still have grain wanting to move, and I agree the guys are busy farming here, and as soon as they get off the tractor, I think there's going to be more move over time. Some of these guys are probably going to hang on until 4th of July weekend and see if, some weather develops. But a good chunk of it's going to move when Brian calls and says, hey, we got to make some room here for some new crops. So another in charge if you don't move it real quick. But technically, Dease corn is 385 last week's high here. I think the technician's going to be watching that real closely here. And we can push on through it, close strong in through here. We're maybe set up to push on up into the 390 area. Seemed like this 395, 396 held most of the winter in through here. So if we can keep the short curving going and the bullish enthusiasm intact in through here, we have a shot maybe that mid-390 area, Todd.
Okay, Bill Gentry, I want you to come into the conversation, too. I want to relate it all back together. Again, this has to do with what our listeners hear on the air during the closing market report. We talked to the Andersons facility near Logansport, Indiana. They have had strong basis levels for corn all year long. You're in one of those areas, Bill, which would run across northern Indiana, northern Illinois, into northern Iowa and southern Minnesota, where the corn crop, while we had a great crop last year, wasn't as good. And that, I think, is one of the reasons the basis levels have been very strong there. Can you put it all into some context together to make a better picture of where we are today?
Well, I think realistically, the commercial demand on the ethanol equation has been rather strong, and we've got several plants around. We've been a little bit slow getting going this year with the rain and stuff like that. But realistically, as far as the market is concerned, I think you've got basically 45 days here to get the market kind of ramped up and try to get it up to maybe that 395 level basis of the board and maybe try to stimulate a little bit of farmer selling. But realistically, if we don't get something going by then, I think the convergence of the new crop sales and the old crop sales together are probably going to cap the market. And the basis has been the strong hand, and the futures market has been content to believe that there's a lot of corn left in the countryside, whether it's in the north central or in the east or the west or the south, whatever the case may be. The trade sentiment is that there's plenty of corn around and we don't have to worry about it. So basis is doing the heavy lifting for the most part, but once we get through planting, knock another variable of production out of the picture, then we are going to get the farmer marketing, and we're going to come to that point in the road where we got to make our sales, whether we need to be free up the space or put a price on next year's crop.
All right. So what I think I'm hearing is that out of position corn is the problem potentially still. Let's go back to Brian Stark. Did you look the basis levels up there?
I did. Everly, Iowa right now is 18 under the July, and our ethanol plant in Denison is bidding 5 under.
Yeah, so you're strong there, yes.
Yeah, I would say historically for the Western Corn Belt, that's a pretty strong basis, at least at the ethanol plant. And I know that I can't name which ones, but up around the elevators in Everly, they've been trading close to option price the July into the end user. So obviously basis feels firm today. And I guess we'll find out here as we move forward if and when it does set back.
Okay, and for those who are wondering where all those things are located, Everly, Iowa, I think, if I remember correctly, about 20 miles south of the Minnesota border and just to the left or to the west of the dead center of the state. And Denison is about an hour straight south of there.
That is correct.
Yeah, so that's where all those things are located. Okay. I'll stay with you, Brian, because I liked Kurt's little tag. Said, well, that the corn's going to stay put until Brian calls him and say, hey, I got to have room. Are you going to have to call him and have room?
I don't think so. I think at this stage of the game, with the strong basis, we've taken the market has taken out a lot of the cash carry all the way to September. The question is going to be now as we move forward is, will there be an incentive to carry corn into new crop? Because obviously with the 1.8 projected carry out, somebody's going to be carrying corn. But it'll be interesting to see. It could be in the west, could be dislodged logistically based on where the stocks are located, but somebody will carry corn in a new crop, and it's a little early to tell whether it'll be us or not.
The item we haven't taken up, Alan Brugler, and we've been moving from one region to the other of the Corn Belt, Tennessee, the Delta region, while the rest of the Corn Belt moved fairly quickly and are on par or ahead. They were way behind. Is that going to make a difference when we get to August?
I think it is. I think you're going to end up with a little less corn acreage down there. I think that's pretty well established. You've had guys that just got past their planting window and said, hey, I'm going to beans. Sounds like there's some flooding in Arkansas that's taken out some of the corn that was planted in the northeastern part of the state. That's going to be replanted to beans. Bottom line is I don't think we're going to have the supply of new crop corn available in July and August that we've gotten used to over the last couple of years. It won't be zero, but it'll be a reduced amount. And that has some implications for old crop corn. I think, as you know, USDA is pretty religious about keeping old crop and new crop consumption segregated in that September stocks report. And typically what that means is your fourth quarter feed and residual use is very small because you used a lot of new crop corn in that July-August time period. And then your SEP-OCT-NOV use tends to be pretty big for the same reason. I think this year you're probably going to see more old crop corn consumption on the balance sheet in the fourth quarter because we're not going to have the availability of that new crop inventory, at least to the degree we've had in past years.
Okay, I'd like each of you to consider this in generalities. I know you have specific cases, but for old crop corn, are you ready just to go ahead and clean the bins out, or are you willing to wait it out? And, Alan, why don't you start?
We're waiting it out. We like the chart action in the wheat today. We think that'll help corn a little bit. We've also noted that on our price and probability forecast we put back in March, the average move to the low for July corn was down to 356. That'd be for a spring low. The price and probability forecast says two-thirds probability. It's between 344 in here. So that tells us we're closer to a low than a high for this time window, which is March 1 to July 1. So we're wanting to sit on it. Again, if with a little more buy signal on my charts, I'd be inclined to do some basis contracts and then try and ride the board back up into $3.90 or $4 area, maybe higher if we got something technically going.
Bill Gentry?
Yeah, primarily we've been proactive marketers, but I think the basis level is the key question. Whenever somebody calls in, ask them what their basis is. If they've got an unusually good basis for this particular time of year, I would sell into that and then re-own if needed. But we continue to try to reward the market on rallies. I think especially if we can get up to 390, well, another 10 cents higher, and I would let it all go.
Kurt Kimmel?
We like moving 50% of what we have left here, take advantage of strong basis here over the next 2 weeks, and save the other half here for see what happens here as we move into June, July. But we like the ownership replacement strategy, especially in options. Option volatility is relatively low. There's some good plays out there where you can move the cash green, get your money and pay some bills and have some working capital to work with, but still maintain some ownership. So if the El Nino or weather phenomena kicks in and the farmer and almanac's right, we have some later on in June, July, you can participate that way. Than risking a down move here later on.
And Brian, I know you'd probably like to have it, but do you think they should sell it to you?
No, I agree with exactly what Kurt said. He took my response. No, but all intents and purposes, I think rewarding strong basis right now is the right thing to do. And the best way, as Kurt said, is to re-own it with some calls. Cheap volatility, slightly out of the money. It's a less expensive, less risky way to participate in upside, and that's what we've been recommending to guys.
Okay. Is there a low in the wheat, Alan? That's something you wanted to talk about today.
Yeah, I think we've got some good reasons for thinking that this is the low, at least for this the March through June period, the end of the old crop period. Of course, that's coming up here in a couple of weeks. The you know you got down to the price probability forecast area that the our inflation adjusted target for the low is 462 for July Chicago, and you had tremendous technical bounce today. You've got the biggest move since, I believe, June of 2012 today, in single-day move. Now, you get a little pushback on Friday, would not be surprising. But, again, I think we've got some buy signals here and maybe some room to run.
Probably a good time to remind folks that we record this on Thursday afternoon. Bill Gentry, 30 cents in the wheat market. That's a pretty good jump, although we've done that in the past. Been a long while, though.
Yeah, it's a pretty bold statement, and I think the chart has been setting up and there's a little bit of a basing pattern, and we need a little bit of a catalyst. I think realistically we're going to get some better information next week with some harvesting maybe getting started in Texas and see what the yields are. Some people think it's going to be really good yields. Other people are talking about some disease pressure. I talked to one of my producers in South Texas this morning that said his wheat's ready. He's had three straight days of rain and thinks he's going to get quite a bit of sprout damage. So, you know, on one side of the equation, the weather's been fine for some crops, and it's been really horrendous for the wheat. Next week should be pretty telling. So if we get the fundamental news to catalyze the technical move, the low very well could be in.
Why do we think this happened today? Is it a technical or a fundamental drive?
I think it was sparked by the technicals, and that's basically what did it.
I think it was just a little bit of both. Like Bill, you know, you mentioned the fundamentals, a little bit of too wet weather in some areas, scab rush. Also, too, concerns maybe a little bit next week is some cold weather. Europe was on holiday. Chinese attaché is lowering some of the ending stocks and wheat in China versus what the WASD numbers were. Just enough fundamentals to spook the short, the wheat short. Man, they're short 110,000 contracts of wheat. Wheat's been a popular short spread. I think they've been short wheat and long crude, short wheat, long everything else in the world. And I think everything just gelled together, and once we got above the 50-day moving average today, it was just nothing for sale at all, hardly.
And I'd tag on to what Kurt said regarding the macros. I think that's something we all have to pay attention to because the funds have built a significant short in wheat and corn, and the fact that the dollar has started to break down and retrace a little bit as well as crude rally, I think causes us to pay attention to potentially giving a reason for the funds to short cover in the feed grains.
Okay, soybeans now. This is a market that we probably need to jump in at some point, but we haven't seen it yet. Can we find a rally place when we're facing what USDA now says is a 500 million bushel potential carryout for the coming year, Alan?
Well, and don't overlook the possibility that 500 is low. if we actually get Informa's acreage numbers, they were 2.6 million acres above USDA. That'd be another 100 and some million bushels of production that would probably end up going on to that carryout. But having said that, the key technical driver in the no beans is that we're in a regression channel. We've been declining ever since November. The quant funds and the algos and everybody else have been selling the dips two standard deviations below trend, buying two below and selling two above. And that's been a self-reinforcing trend. Right now, that's pretty stout resistance around 970 on the NOVE. Right now, we're not even threatening 970. But I think if you get rallies, they're going to sell it again when we get to that area on the argument that we've got these big global supplies and bigger supplies coming. And at the moment, no real threat to the U.S. production.
Well, I think one thing to keep in mind is we've got a pretty high estimate as far as yield expectations coming out of the USDA. If we happen to trim that yield a little bit, especially on larger acres that are maybe not as fruitful or not as yielding, then the 500 is probably a fair value. But it's still going to be burdensome looking forward.
I would just add that obviously we came dangerously close to the fall low contract low of 927 here earlier this week with the USDA report. And I think obviously there isn't much tech support underneath us other than the psychological level of $9. So we've been seeing the funds kind of prep up and buy beans and sell corn, sell wheat. And now that ratio recently had gotten climbed to 2.5 to 1, you could see some correction, especially with Informa's estimate today where the oilseed complex leads the bearish move down versus maybe feed grain starting to bounce a little bit.
Kurt, I was starting to feel a little better about the market until we opened this can of worms up.
Well, I've been looking for those beans to trade $8 for the last 6 months. Yeah, I mean, I've hedged everything in beans, short beans, and I think the trade knows it. But I think the corn bean ratio there, I think we're seeing a little bit more enthusiasm buying corn, selling beans here. But, man, these fundamentals are overwhelming. It's hard for me to be too optimistic beans. But like Al said, you get in that 970 area, you could get a lay in some more hedges or put some more price floors on.
Speaking of fundamentals, the one item that we really did put down other than the acreage figures that was fundamental was bird flu. Nebraska has an outbreak this week, confirmed. What does it mean for you and your thought process, Alan? Is there enough infection that it really is going to make a difference? USDA has said not yet, at least in their last WASDE report.
Yeah, I think they didn't feel they had enough data. From an analyst standpoint, you have to consider a couple of different things. Number one, what's the scale? All right, when we're talking probably, I think the latest estimate is about 35 million birds total.
Right.
Mix of chickens and turkeys. Turkeys eat more corn than in a lifetime than the chickens do. If you're depopulating, you're not depopulating probably for the whole year. I think most of these guys are looking at 3 month windows. So, you know, you take your 35 million birds, you take some assumed corn consumption, you divide that by four, assuming that those facilities are empty for 3 months, and it ends up not being a very large number when you compare it to 5.2 or 5.3 billion bushel annual feed use. It's obviously going to eat into consumption of both corn and meal, but again, I think it's a fairly small number. Consumers going to see it on the egg prices and on the turkey prices next fall, but it's probably not a major driver on feed consumption.
Everybody in agreement on that front?
Yeah, I would say so. From my perspective, I would say that it's going to have more impact on meal usage than anything. And it's, as Alan mentioned, it's probably too small to have a big impact at this point, but it's definitely something psychological that the trade looks at.
I might touch a little bit more on that bird flu issue because one of my clients is right in the heart of the poultry stuff over in eastern Ohio, and talked with him and his agronomist this morning, and they're right in the thick of it, and they're talking about the depop and repop is actually more like a 6 or 7 month process. They can get the buildings all cleaned out, but they have to leave them set for basically 6 months to make sure that all that stuff's gone. Especially when it comes to the egg laying facilities, the numbers creep up a little bit faster. So the reason why the turkeys are getting more cases of this is because they're in open buildings with the open sides, whereas the chickens are all enclosed. I think that's probably a bigger factor for them. And they also say that the migratory bird problems are really transferring this thing a little bit faster, especially over in Iowa.
Now, I suspect he's a little worried, and if it were to make its way into the southern U.S. in greater amounts than it is at this point, that could change how much of an impact bird flu, avian influenza would have, I would suppose.
Yeah, I think that's what we tried to put an end to it about 4 or 6 weeks ago, and now it's kind of like Pandora's box. It just keeps coming back to us.
Okay, final words from each of you. Bill, we'll start with you.
I hope the guys are getting wrapped up in planning, turning their focus back towards the markets, being safe, and hopefully the guys that have been too wet will get dry and get a shot at it.
Bill Gentry, of course, is with Risk Management Commodities. He's out of Lafayette, Indiana. Kurt Kimmel is with Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Kurt?
Hey, our number one recommendation is buy stock at Egg Beaters and go ahead and hedge your Thanksgiving turkey now so you're ahead of the game and everybody can come to your house for breakfast and turkey lunch.
That is a recommendation that you can really follow.
Now, there's some opportunities out there. Stay awake and take advantage of the volatility that picks up.
Okay, Brian Stark of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County.
That's a tough act to follow, but I would say continue to reward strength in old crop corn basis as you move forward, and obviously continue to have a safe spring.
And Alan Brugler, Brugler Management out of Omaha, Nebraska.
Don't overlook the weakness in the dollar right now and the inverse of that, which is the rising CRB index. CRB's been on a pretty good run here, which says that most commodity prices are going up right now. Grains have been kind of the laggards due to fundamental issues, and there's always a couple of commodities, usually three or four in that CRB, they're going the wrong direction. But if the CRB continues to run, I think we'll get a little bit of lift in all these commodities, and you need to keep that as a background factor. If you're neutral, you really ought to lean bullish as long as that's in play.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Our thanks to our panelists, including Alan Brugler. He's a Brugler Marketing and Management out of Omaha, Nebraska. Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois. And Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. Along with Brian Stark of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.